Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Darren, Donick, and Chase. Sponsored by Blue Note Juke Joint. Smoother than smooth. With hosts Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McKay. On Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
And a good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Another gorgeous day here in Middle Tennessee. Man, I hope it's an exact day as yesterday. Let's just duplicate yesterday. What was it, 70 degrees? Hello. Gotta love that. I believe.
Was it 70?
Yeah. I think it was 69. It got some places it got to 70 degrees.
That's nice.
And I think I saw something where exactly a week prior, it was 18 degrees. It's so not bad.
Quite a swing.
Yeah, 52 degrees, not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Nash Vegas at its best.
You got to love it. You got to love it. But like I said, I'll take, you know, close to 70 or 70 again today. That would be fantastic. Darren McFarland down here in Rutherford County in sunny Smyrna. Willie Donick is over in East Nashville. Chase McCabe is in parts unknown. It's always sunny there. And Elijah Campbell is back at our Wholesaling Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. I was just looking at these graphics, Chase, that you put up. You know what I kind of like about it? I think maybe it should be kind of part of our show name, the DDC. You know, it just sounds official. You know, did you check with the DDC? I like that. I mean, that, you know, Darren, Donick, and Chase is cool, but the DDC, I think we're on. That just sounds really official.
I like that.
Yeah,
don't do anything
until you check with the DDC.
Well, exactly. And I did.
You better
I did,
check with the DDC.
I did it that way on purpose. So because
did you?
DDC would stand out.
Well, just so you know, the graphic that we're talking about for everybody listening, we'll paint the picture. It's Darren, Donick, and Chase, and the D and the D and the C are capitalized. Well, they're all capitalized, but they're in red. They're in big, bold red, and the other letters are in white. So when you look at it, you just glance at it, you just see DDC. And
right.
I was like, it just jumped out at me. I was like, I like that. You know, what did the DDC say? That's what I want to know. I mean, that's cool. That's your opinion, but what did the DDC say?
It sounds a little serious, but
it
like,
really
it's
does.
Not that serious. It's fun, hopefully. Hopefully
fun and
you know you're in trouble if the DDC comes after you.
Yeah, yeah.
See, we don't want that image
out
there.
Has the DDC said anything about that? I mean, you don't want them knocking on your door.
We don't want to be regulators.
Regulators, mount up.
You down with DDC?
Yeah, you know me.
Nice. Very nice. I think we're on to something.
Approved
I think
by the DDC.
This may be our new show name. I don't know if I'm going to say Darren, Donick, and Chase much anymore.
Now, you've seen that logo before, right? I mean, we've had that for a little bit.
The way you did it today?
Yeah.
Really?
That's been out.
I don't know why it jumped out at me today.
I don't know, but it's been around.
Well, I don't know. Today it spoke to me, Chase. I don't know what to say. Today well, I looked at it and I was like, DDC. I don't know what. Maybe it's the 70 degrees. Maybe my brain unfroze. Last week maybe it was frozen.
I think it might have been.
But boy.
But that's okay.
You better check with the DDC. That's all I've got to say. We can become the new Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports. Oh, crap. The DDC's at the door. What did we do now? UT. They may be wondering if the DDC is coming to East Tennessee. Oh, crap.
Oh, boy.
Don't send the DDC.
They're always looking over their shoulder. That's for sure. As they should.
One of these days. You know, one of these days, you know, I have to believe Tennessee's going to put together a winning sports program. One of these days. I mean, literally, I was thinking about that on Saturday when they were playing Kentucky. I'm like, what has just happened to UT Athletics? I mean, Remember when the Lady Vols dominated, you know, everybody? They never lost. And, you know, Tennessee football was buzzing and Tennessee baseball. Now, Tennessee baseball may be the best chance, right?
They're
really, they look like they're going to be really good this year. I don't know. They're not going to be Vanderbilt good, but they're going to be really good. I like what they have going on there, but, you know.
I'd love for that series to matter, though. You know, like the fact that you got Vandy, that's one of the tops in the nation, Tennessee working their way up, and that be a fun series where it's like, oh, okay, these two in-state rivals really going at it.
Yeah, it would be fun.
And I feel like it's getting there.
So. It's getting there, no question.
Do you feel like, I mean, really to that level?
Well, I mean,
that's it.
I'm not saying both being national contenders, but I'm meaning where Tennessee, it's like they're, you know, Vandy circling them up. Hey, we got to watch out here. Which Tim's going to do that with every team. We know how Tim Corbin works, but you know, where it's just like Tennessee can hang, and I just feel like it's a process. But I feel like they're on the right track.
Oh, I think when you start making the NCAA tournament. You can hang, you know, and, sure. And you're competitive in the SEC. There's eight teams in the top 25, you know, in the whole country. So that's why I say I think they can hang. Now, you know, what separates, you know, the top of the top, that's a different story. And Vanderbilt, of course, you know, they've got years of momentum and things like that that are going to make it tough. But I think Tennessee's come a long way in the last couple of years.
I was checking odds at DraftKings. Have you guys looked at the odds of tonight's game?
I have not, actually.
Okay. Well, let's. What do we think the line is? Tennessee here in town at Memorial Gym to take on Vanderbilt.
I will say, let's see. Tennessee's so hard to read these days.
It does not say in there which Tennessee team.
Yeah, like which team is going to show up. That's what I would like. And which Vandy team is going to show up? I mean, that's another.
Well, Vandy's been pretty consistent here of late. Yeah. I mean, they're playing a pretty consistent level. I mean, I think they've kind of turned a corner. I think.
Well, to me, turning the corner would be some W's.
I understand, but I'm saying they're in these games. They're in these games to the end.
Knocking on the door. Got to bust through.
I would say Tennessee. I know this is basketball, but Tennessee by a touchdown.
Okay.
I think you're in the neighborhood.
You know,
I think
six and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I'll be different. I'll go 7.5.
The line is 8.
Okay, so Willie was closer.
Mm-hmm. Now, the DDC has it at 7.5, so, you know, depending on which one you look at.
Okay.
The DDC sportsbook.
The DDC
Can
sportsbook.
Can we form a sportsbook?
Give us a big bag of cash, and I guess we will do that. Brinks truck, and yes, we will do that. Oh, wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be awesome.
I think the big question tonight's going to be, you know, will Vanderbilt get the third guy to help Pippen and Dessou? For example, against Alabama, what separated them? What gave them a chance? Max Evans, who can be really, really good, and he can be non-existent. But he's been coming on some. He's had more good nights than not so good. When he's hitting and he's a threat, it makes him a lot tougher to guard. And when they don't have that third guy, you know, you can really concentrate. There's only so much that Pippen and Dessou can do, as well as they've played as a tandem. And then the other question, of course, always for Tennessee, especially on the road, is, you know, how efficient will they be offensively? Vanderbilt is not a great defensive team. This is an area that they've tried to improve in, but, you know, they've gotten a little bit better. Cleavon Brown gives them a little bit more of a presence in the middle on defense. He started to play a little bit better. That's another reason why they've been more competitive, but it's still not a great defensive team. So how well can they guard Tennessee with some of the struggles that Tennessee can have offensively?
Well, why don't we save this conversation for about 6 minutes from now when we talk to Joe Lunardi?
Well, Joe Lunardi, I am so excited to talk to Joe Lunardi.
I never thought about bowing out. Like, I honestly, when I found out we're going to have Joey Brackets on,
all
I was
the
like,
time you need.
I think I'm just going to just bow out of this and just let Willie just goob all over Joe.
When this, full disclosure, when this got presented to us that we could have him on, I said, Elijah, do this on a non-game day when Willie doesn't have any conflicts. Like, we recognize this is the Willie Donick special.
This is earlobe to earlobe, the smile on his. I mean, when he.
Good stuff.
I mean, yeah. I will still volunteer to bow out and just sit back and relax.
I don't want you to.
But I will be excited.
I will be excited to ask questions.
Good win by the Predators last night, getting a 2-0 shutout in Detroit, and they'll be right back at it tomorrow night against the Red Wings, same time, same channel. And then they'll be home for a couple matinee games against Columbus this weekend. But a couple of power play goals in the third period. I guess it was just meant to be for Philip Forsberg. Last night, after getting that goal late in the second period, taken off the board, he corrected that.
Move.
Huh?
I thought that was questionable.
It was close. I
think
okay
that would be a hung jury.
I was okay with it.
If there was a panel of 10.
Yeah. It was
for
close.
Example, Hal Gill thought it was a good call. Chris Mason did not think it was a good call.
I asked Pete Weber to start post game, and he was okay with the call as well.
And I was more. I come back to one thing, the Gary Bettman speech that happened, where he said, "Let's not overthink this." Was it egregious?
Right. That's
that
my
egregious?
Whole thing. No.
That's the only thing I would say. And I certainly saw what they saw.
Was there contact was made in the contact, blue ice?
Incidental contact in the blue ice by rule is, you know, reviewable for sure.
Did it affect Bernier? It did.
I don't think it did.
And then time went on. I get that. And Philip Forsberg, by the way, was extremely patient on that play.
He waited.
And Ernie messed it all up. But the bottom line is, if Granlund doesn't make that contact, there is no call. But he was in the blue ice. He made contact. He affected the play of Jonathan Bernier. I don't love it. I think I could see the other side, but the bottom line is that happened, and if you're going by the letter of the law, it's a penalty. It's the way I see it.
If they had waved it off right away, then I would say no question. Mm-hmm. Not overturnable. The problem I have is it's supposed to have to be egregious to overturn. I think that you can make a pretty solid argument that Bernier, while he did get clipped, is back in position to make a save because, as you said, Forsberg delays. He waits. And by the time Forsberg is preparing to shoot, it's Ernie, his own teammate, that's taking him out of the play. That is my argument, but that's not the worst call I've ever seen, right? I've seen that call go either way. To me, that's a split panel. Like, if you had a panel of 10, I have a lot of doubts that all 10 would say, yep, that's
no, and I'm fine. That's what I'm saying. I see both sides, and yeah. So therefore,
right,
I have
right,
to be okay
complain.
With either
but,
call.
But
right?
But to me, if it's a split panel, you should go with what you had on the ice.
Okay,
that's what
right.
I fall back
fair
on
enough.
Is the tiebreaker.
All right, well, I could see that too. That's fair.
But to their credit, they kept pushing. I thought that they played even better after that play. From that play on, I thought the Predators were the better team.
Well, I definitely
they
were think they came out in the third
and
period.
They played a really good third period.
They were very aggressive in the third. You could tell. They had their foot on the gas in the third. That was
yep.
good.
Yep. And Roman Josi and Philip Forsberg took their game to top level, which is what you need your best players to do, right? I thought those guys and Pecorine, key saves
yep.
at the key times and never allowed the Red Wings to get back in it.
Okay, we need you to go hydrate, okay?
Hydrate.
Yeah,
I got
to get ready.
I got to get a glass
get
of water.
Get a towel
gotta
and hydrate.
Deep breath. I
Joe
breathe.
Lunardi.
My heart rate is already going up a little bit here.
Joey Brackets in the on-deck circle. He's coming up next on the DDC ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thank you, Max. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this beautiful, gorgeous Wednesday morning here in Nashville. Our show is brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey. Smoother than smooth. Let's bring in Joe Lunardi. Joey Brackets is on the line with us. He's got a book, Bracketology, March Madness, College Basketball, and the Creation, a National Obsession. He is on the line with us. Joe, good morning. How you doing?
I'm fine, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. Tell us a little bit about the book for people that are going to get very interested in this, because we've got a lot of college basketball fans here in this area. But tell us a little bit about what they can expect when they go get this.
Well, I appreciate that. I've been approached many, many times about doing this and generally have declined it in part because I didn't know that a book about me was really all that interesting, you know, which is probably not the best way to go on the radio and promote the book. But so, you know, in this approach, a really good guy named David Smale, an author and a very experienced book author out of Kansas City, he's like, no, it's going to be about bracketology and kind of the evolution of it along with the evolution of the sport. And, you know, obviously I talk about how I got into it and what my life is like behind the curtain, if you will. But it's really a basketball book about the tournament and how the tournament is put together. And you know, I finally became convinced that that really was interesting, and that it was worth doing. And then, you know, I don't know if you guys noticed, but like this whole pandemic thing came along, and we all had all this time to kind of do different things, housebound, and you know, this seemed to be a good use of that time in the spring and in the summer. And the hope was that if there was a season and if there was a tournament, that we would try to publish the book right around now when interest was peaking in college basketball. And lo and behold, through a lot greater powers than us, here we are. And I'm just grateful for that. And I do think that college basketball fans will find it both informative and entertaining, because my whole thing is always, like, you can take your work seriously without taking yourself too seriously. Like, I'm working in the toy department of life, and I'm just grateful for that. And hopefully that's the tone and that's what comes across in the book.
Makes sense to me. Look, I'm going to ask one question and get out of the way, and then I'll tell you why that's going to happen. Just because Tennessee is in town tonight to take on Vanderbilt, and we covered both teams pretty strongly all year, I've just got to ask you, what is your impressions of Tennessee? Because we can't figure them out. Could you tell us which team is going to show up tonight to take on Vanderbilt? We'll tell you what the outcome is going to be, but they're a confusing team of late.
Yeah, I have a couple thoughts. One is, I actually did a Tennessee game on ESPN Plus way back in December, when my school, St. Joe's, played at Thompson Bowling. And it, you know, it did not go well for the Hawks, as you might imagine. And I thought in prepping for that game and in, you know, watching a couple Tennessee games leading up to it, I thought, man, this is as good a starting lineup as there is in the country. And I thought they were a legitimate Final Four contender at that point, based on personnel and based upon, frankly, how hard it is to score against them. So, you know, I can't say I get to watch all 40 minutes of every game, but when I do, I'm struck by the fact that, you know, their offense has never really caught up to their defense. And, you know, maybe there's just some teams in the league above them, Alabama, Arkansas in particular, who are just more explosive offensively. And you know, great defense is a great thing. But as I always say, in any sport, if you play the best defense in the world, but you can't score, the best you can do is tie. And I think that there's going to come a point in the NCAA tournament, as there have been points during the regular season, you know, it may not be till the second weekend, because, you know, Tennessee is certainly good enough to win two games in the right draw. but you know, they're going to have to, you know, score 75 or 80 to win because the other team is that talented. And I'm just concerned that maybe they're not going to be able to do that. Having said that, I'm not sure that either of the teams tonight is even the best team in the state. That might be Belmont.
Yeah. We had it on the list to ask you about Belmont.
No doubt.
I thought you might.
Joe, I'm going to turn things over to Willie Donick. He played at Vanderbilt when really short shorts were cool. And he's kind
the
of our
version. Last year's of short shorts.
Yeah, the last year of short shorts. And he is our version of you on this show. So, we even hesitated to even get involved in this interview. We were just going to let Willie take control of this. But I now give you Willie.
Well, Joe, it is a pleasure to talk to you. I can remember in 1991, we lost on our home court at Vanderbilt in the SEC tournament, and I spent the rest of the weekend really stressing about whether we were going to get in. We did as a 9 seed. In this, we lost to Georgetown. Mutombo in mourning, would have played the undefeated UNLV team in the second round. But that's when I really started trying to figure some of this stuff out. And, of course, I had no idea what I was doing. And it was a few years later when you started doing some stuff. And I'm just really curious, you know, what was the start for you to start to try to figure out how the committee put together the field?
Well, I love hearing those kind of stories, Willie. And I do remember that 8-9 game. I didn't remember Vandy's, you know, maybe being on the bubble to get to it.
I have no idea if we were on the bubble or not, but I was so you worry about worst case scenario, right? Are we going to get left out here?
And don't let these guys get on you about short shorts and like it's always the short, good looking guys who are really good at this.
Joe, I wore parachute pants. I would never make fun of Willie for wearing short shorts. So
we need to keep that in mind. But maybe about 10 years ahead of you, Willie, my St. Joe's team coming out of the old East Coast Conference that doesn't exist anymore. This was in a 48-team field. Got in an 8-9 game. I was in college with a chance if we won to play the undefeated number one team. Sound familiar?
Yes.
And that was DePaul at that time with Mark Aguirre. And I just remember thinking to myself, you know, maybe we could be that team to beat the one, right? Long before UMBC and 1 versus 16 and all that. And lo and behold, won our first round game against Creighton. Drew the number one team in DePaul, undefeated, number one overall. But in those days, the top four seeds had a bye. So they hadn't played, and we had. And no shot clock, no three-pointer, went on a layup at the buzzer 49-48. 1981 shocked the number one team in the country, go on to the Elite Eight. And that was what galvanized me to kind of poke behind the curtain and see and look at, how does this thing get put together? Like, how does that even happen? And that was kind of when I started looking at brackets. A good Tennessean, Al Gore, was nice enough to invent the internet, he claimed, and that allowed, you know, people like me to have a platform to do it publicly in the mid-90s with posting brackets on ESPN.com. And, I mean, who knew that that was going to become as popular as it has? If I knew it was going to be this popular, I wouldn't have, like, worked so hard in my regular job. I would have started this years ago.
So it was sort of for people that don't know, you mentioned St. Joe's a couple of times. That was your main job, and it sort of evolved from that, right?
Correct.
And so back in the day, you just referenced it. Like, you started doing this before we have all these materials now, where a guy like me, who spends a fraction of the amount of time that you spend, can still put together a fairly accurate, you know, put some numbers up there that are fairly, you know, informative. But before that was available, how did you get started on that? How did you find your reference points?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it wasn't a very transparent process. And that's being kind. It was a pretty secretive, and really, probably until the mid to late 90s, you know, like kind of an old boys club with literally cigars in a room and horse trading going on with the commissioners and the ADs in some of the power conferences, you know. I'll give you Ole Miss if you give me, you know, Minnesota or whatever. And you know, that's just a natural evolution of things. But now there's so much at stake, monetarily and otherwise, that there has to be at least some peek into how it gets done. But in the early days, I would talk to any former or current or prospective committee members who would let me pick their brain. And you know, we had the RPI being replicated by some data people at the time, and that was really the only thing that was available. And even then, you had to dig pretty deep for it. All you could really do was study past brackets and past records and see how they maybe corresponded with the current year. It wasn't very exacting. And I look back and think, what was I thinking in some of those years? But again, it's all relative based upon the amount of information that was available. And if there is one lasting legacy, if you will, of bracketology, I think it's the fact that by bringing the public behind the scenes of the process and explaining it, it essentially forced the NCAA's hand to become more transparent, because they were beginning to lose the battle of secrecy, right? Like, if this knucklehead named Lenardi and maybe others like him were out there starting to explain what we do to the public, maybe we should do it so we get our side of the story out.
That's a great point.
And that's really what happened. So you know, I don't know that, you know, I deserve a disproportionate or even any credit necessarily for that, because that wasn't why I got into it. Like, I wasn't trying to be like Woodward and Bernstein here, investigative reporting. I just liked basketball, and I liked the brackets, and it was a hobby. And that was all it was until, you know, I started going on TV in the early 2000s. Who knew that, you know, the little big nose in Philly would like actually, like, people would be interested in what I have to say. Like, I'd come home to my wife and daughters, and they didn't give a damn what I had to say. So I was, you know, pretty used to being ignored at that point. And here we are now, you know, coaches and writers and athletic directors and reporters and broadcasters are calling me, Joe, what do you think? And I'm thinking, you know, I'd like to be a bogey golfer. That was really what I thought. And you know, it took 20 years for that to happen and 20 years for bracketology to be a thing. So, you know, it just proves, I guess, that if you live long enough and you work hard enough, good things happen.
Well, it's great stuff. Joe, I know you're short on time. The book is Bracketology. Joe Lenardi is with us. So, Joe, before we let you go, give us your thought on Belmont, because we all have taken a great admiration for what they've done over a long period of time, and they've got another really good club this year.
Yeah, I mean, 24-1, right, is 24-1. And, you know, if I were in the room, and this is the biggest misconception around when it comes to bracketology, that, you know, when I say so-and-so's in or so-and-so's out or so-and-so's here and so-and-so's there, people, you know, either get happy or not happy because I've given a positive perspective on their team or not, that I'm doing what I think. And that's not my job. My job is to forecast, based on data and history, what the committee will do. So let me be clear. If Belmont lost the game, including in the OVC tournament, and I were voting, I would absolutely put them in. Without even, like, I don't care about quad one, I don't care about quad two. like at some point in time, 24-1 is 24-1. To me, like they've played all but one Division I game. Like these aren't legitimate opponents, and they're 12-0 on the road, which is or away from home. That's impossible to do anywhere. What will the committee do, though, is the question that you're really asking me, and I would say it's less than 50-50 that they would get an at-large bid without anything in Quad 1, Quad 2. We'll remember back, you know, in the dark ages when we had a tournament 2 years ago, that Belmont got an at-large bid and got into the first four and won a game. You know, Rick Byrd got his tournament win and his kind of swan song there, and that was great. But, like, Belmont had quad one and quad two wins that year. There was a guy in the league, I forget his name, Josh somebody, who was really good.
Yeah, Moran, pretty good, yeah.
And they were able to get a win there, and it elevated. You know, Belmont's current profile doesn't really look like it did then. So I'm concerned. Not because of what I would do, but because of how the committee has treated Belmont in the past. So, as Al Davis would say, and it, to this case in the Bruins, just win, baby.
That's right. That's right. Joe, we know your time is short. You're doing a lot of these, promoting this book. Great. Best of luck with that. It's a pleasure to talk to you, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
All right. That's Joe Lunardi. The book is Bracketology. Check it out, how he does what he does. He is center stage. I'm sure he'll pop on the broadcast tonight with Tennessee taking on Vanderbilt at Memorial Gym. So on that, let's send it to Chase McCabe. He's got a word for you about Music City Grand Prix.
Yes, I do, and that was a fantastic interview. And Willie, go cool off for a second, because okay. I know that was...
You know, I'm just trying to catch my breath.
It's time for you to be a part of sports and entertainment history as the inaugural Music City Grand Prix roars into Nashville August 6th through 8th. This IndyCar event, a premier IndyCar event, will be a three-day international festival of speed and sound, and it will bring the biggest stars in music, food, and, of course, racing. Joseph Newgarden, who is from Hendersonville, Jimmy Johnson, Elio Castroneves, they're all coming to Nashville. Secure your Music City Grand Prix three-day ticket package now, starting at $119, by logging on to MusicCityGP.com or Ticketmaster.com. The Music City Grand Prix Festival experience will offer something for everyone. You don't want to miss the new sound of Nashville. So visit MusicCityGP.com. Or Ticketmaster.com to get your three-day ticket package to this summer's fastest event.
Good stuff from Joe Lunardi. Appreciate him joining us here on Darren Donick and Chase. Our show brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey. Smoother than smooth. Good stuff. Willie, did you towel off?
I did. I had to do a towel off, took a little drink of water, just, you know, taking deep breaths. That was good. That was good. Talk to Joe.
That could have
first time I ever talked to Joe.
I know. That is weird, right?
I remember
y'all never
when
had
he
him
was,
on before?
I was thinking about that, and I couldn't ever think of a time.
Never had him on that I can remember. I remember go as far back as the mid-90s, you know, where I was, you know, in the first few years of doing the show, and the first few I was doing Vanderbilt's basketball games as the color announcer, and there was a year that they were on the bubble. Actually, 2 years. They made it 1 year and just missed the following year, and that's when I started paying attention. This was way before Joe Lunardi started coming up on popping up on TV, and you ever saw what he looked like, but you would read about Joe Lunardi some, and he was at the time they called it the SID, the media relations guy, for St. Joe's in Philadelphia, you know, and he was trying to figure out, you know, how do you separate? What is the committee looking at, you know, between a St. Joe's and the Atlantic 10, a mid-major team, you know, a Fordham coming out of New York as opposed to a Power 5 team and piecing it all together. And that really got my attention because we would discuss it before every game. Is Vanderbilt in? Is Vanderbilt not in? Like, they've been on the bubble many years, right? That's one thing. And Tennessee has, too. And then you have the Middle Tennessees, the Belmonts are now entering the picture of teams of, you know, really good squads that maybe dominate a league, but if they were to slip in the conference tournament, are they in? Right? That's a, it's a classic debate. So he is, needless to say, been at the forefront of this. And the other guy I thought of, and I wish we had time to ask him about it, but remember Cam Newton was one of those guys that he referred to, the guy that was running the committee back in the day before you had all these materials. And I can remember having a chance to talk to Coach Newton several times during an SEC tournament in Atlanta, and we would pick his brain about how the process works. But that's how I kind of formulated how it worked in my mind, so it was interesting to hear Joe's perspective there.
Yeah, that was fun. That was cool.
So what do you guys think of Belmont? Like, now this is a year where you couldn't schedule the way you wanted to schedule, mm-hmm. right? So does that change the way the committee would look at Belmont if they were to slip in the conference tournament?
Well, I don't think they're going to get left out, especially this year. I can't imagine that they're going to get left out. I think that would be egregious if they did. Go back to what we had been talking about earlier, and we were talking about Belmont, and I've told you I've had some talks off the air with people, and it seems like, you know, it seems like there's the reoccurring theme of how good are they? Because we don't have exactly what you said. They didn't have the opportunity to have a couple of intriguing matchups, right, out of conference that we could look back on and go, okay, so here's a gauge of really what they are, and it's trying to figure out, are they just really this good, or has the conference taken a step back this year? Because we're used to Murray being really good, and Murray has taken a step back. Austin Peay has been very good of late, and it looks like they're a little bit down this year. So the conference overall doesn't have, yes, Belmont has always been at the top, but it doesn't seem like they have the same conference strength, so to speak, as maybe some of the years past. So it is hard to gauge, but with that being said, I also don't believe, even if they have a hiccup, that they're going to – I don't believe they're going to get left out. I don't believe they have to win, like we've talked about so many times over the years. Yeah, but when you're in these type of conferences, you know the drill. You better win or you're not going to get in. You know, that's just how it works. It stinks, but that's how it works. I don't believe that's going to be the case this year because it's not like nobody's talking about them. Everybody's fully aware of what Belmont is doing this year, right?
He brought them up unprompted.
Yeah, they're not out of sight, out of mind.
They are a team that just is on the radar for people that follow college basketball. It wasn't the case, you know, 15 years ago. They were not anywhere near the radar. But now, in the last 10 years, I mean, every single person knows that every year Belmont's going to be in the thick of things. And now, here they are, 24-1. So let me ask Elijah, though, because Joe mentioned the key thing. You know, they had the quad one, quad two, right? If you look at the KenPom ratings, Belmont hasn't even played a team in the top 100, right? It's just because of the way that the schedule has gone. They didn't have a chance to find somebody to play. And I'm sure nobody was really dying to play them because they know it's going to be a really tough game. So what does that do to their chances if they were to slip up?
I don't know if Elijah's
good,
there.
That's a good point. That's a good point, Elijah. I mean, I didn't really think about that. That's why you were brought in. I didn't even think about that. That's good. A really good point.
That's the stuff you can only get here. But, yeah, I'll have you repeat that because we have a call. We had a call, so.
Okay, I'm sorry, Elijah, but I was pointing out the quad one, quad two.
Yes.
Right? The Belmont has not played anybody in the top 100.
Correct. They have not played a quad one or two team. All of their games have been played in the bottom, the bottom two quadrants this year.
So the next best team in the OVC is Morehead, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yep. Morehead
Murray,
State.
And Morehead in KenPom right now is 140, Murray 138. Now those are good teams, right? We know those are tricky teams, but in terms of the overall big picture here, it's not going to be the type of thing that gets your attention from afar.
And I got to ask you, Elijah, real quick, before you, I know you've got a phone caller we'll get to in just a minute. You, as a college basketball fan, Kansas State last night. Ugliest uniforms you've ever seen in the history of college basketball.
They're horrific.
And how will that affect the committee?
I don't know how you win with those uniforms. Like, I would have expected that to be an automatic loss no matter who you play.
It should be.
Those uniforms.
That should be a fine. And if they win the Big 12 tournament in those uniforms, their automatic bid shouldn't count. Because those are that's a crime.
Like, they cannot go to the NCAA tournament with those uniforms. Like, that can't happen on that stage. It can't happen.
It's on par with the Adidas ones. I don't know if you guys remember. It had been like 2012, 2013. Adidas had all these team jerseys where they're like all striped. And Kansas wore them, and they were hideous. And like Cincinnati wore them, and Baylor's were highlighted colors. Like, those are the worst I've ever seen. Where their shorts look like swim trunks. Like, really bad swim trunks or board shorts. But last night's Kansas State one, man, like, I almost forgive Oklahoma for losing that game.
Well, I think they lost because they were just distracted. Like, they just kept looking at the uniforms unis, going, these are terrible. And they didn't take them seriously because they're like, no team can be good in these uniforms. Like, I just don't think they took them seriously. I mean, Easter is still a good ways away. I mean, they look like a big Easter egg. I mean, it just
half of them looked like a big Easter egg. The shorts were a totally different color. It was horrific.
It was terrible. Terrible.
Okay, so while we're on this subject, let me ask you, Darren, about something that I've noticed. What is Kentucky doing with some guys wearing neon shoes, different color shoes? I've never seen that before.
Yeah, I don't know.
I have to believe some people have talked about that. You know, it doesn't bother me that much, but to me, it's a good look when everybody's got the same color. If everybody wants to wear blue shoes or white shoes or blue with white, you know, your school colors, or even work in black if everybody's doing the same thing, I get that. But you had some guys wearing orange neon, some guys wearing the Baylor yellow neon, and other guys wearing the school colors. That was a weird look to me.
Explains their troubles.
My guess, Willie, is that the rabbit's foot didn't work, four-leaf clover didn't work. I mean, they're trying anything to bring them some good luck and change their fortunes, so maybe that was the next thing on the list or down the list.
I guess, but
I don't
like
know.
Do it as a team. Do it together, all for one, instead of scattered about with where you got several colors jumping out there.
Yeah, I agree. I like some uniformity with uniforms.
Say that fast. Really fast three times.
I like some uniformity with uniforms. I like some uniformity with yeah.
All right.
The call screener says someone is on the line who played at St. Joe's when Lenardi was there.
Well, this is awesome. Get him on.
Cool.
Let's bring him up here on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Is our eyes deceiving us, or is that information correct?
No, that information is correct. My name is Michael Thomas, and I played for the Hawks from 74 to 78 and started all 4 years. And Joe Lenardi also was there. He was always a wizard with his numbers and things like that. And I've been to Nashville, been here for 2 years, worked for Nestle Waters in sales, and you guys do a great job. So I had to call in when you guys started talking about bracketology.
Okay, all right.
That's awesome. Yeah. So tell us what Joe was like back then. That's a great reference point there, going way back.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was there that far back, honestly.
I thought he was in the 80s.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was in the late
70s. Well, you know, Joe was still coming around on campus. You know, I played, you know, earlier than when he was there. And back then, only 32 teams got into the NCAA tournament. And the NIT was very popular. So they took the teams that didn't win their conference championships. For example, in 74, Maryland and NC State play for the ACC title. The winner goes to the NCAA. The loser goes to the NIT. So David Thompson and NC State beat Maryland, John Lucas and that team. They go to the NCAAs and they win it in 74 over UCLA. Then Maryland goes to the NIT and then they win it. By today's standards, Maryland would have been the number one seed in the West. NC State would have been the number one seed in the Southeast. Both teams would have made the big game. So it was a huge difference. But Joe just brought a whole new angle at looking at teams. And once the NCAA expanded, I think it went from 32 to 48, then 48 to 64, then 64 to 68. So he was just ahead of the ball game there. And we produce a lot of good students at St. Joe's University.
I was going to say, was there anybody of note, Michael, that you played with?
On my team, I played with a guy named Norman Black, who was our leading scorer, starting forward, who ended up playing a little bit for the Indiana Pacers. Then he's now currently coaching in the Philippines, where he's won four championships. I played against Kobe's dad, Joe Bryant. Joe Bryant was a senior at LaSalle College when I was a freshman at St. Joe's. And so I know Joe very well and still feel sad about what happened to his son. Also played against Gene Banks, Mike Jaminski, that 1978 Duke
team,
which
wow.
went to the Final Four.
Yeah,
what a great team.
And we played most of our home games at the Palestra. But Cameron Indoor Stadium was a nut house to play in, man, and one of the craziest venues I've ever played in. Played at Madison Square Garden, which was my first game as a Hawk. We played in the ECAC Holiday Festival against Rutgers team the year before they went undefeated.
Did you ever play against that 78 Kentucky team that played Duke?
No, Goose Gibbons never played against those guys. Okay. But Duke ended up, I think, losing to those guys
they did,
in that Final Four.
High-scoring affair, yeah.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. But you guys do a great job. Just wanted to call in. But I enjoyed Music City. The company moved me here from Philadelphia 2 years ago, so I enjoy it. But keep doing a great job, guys.
Welcome. All right, welcome, and don't be a stranger to the show. Thanks for your call.
All right, appreciate it. Take care now.
All right. I didn't realize Joe was there in the mid-70s? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't realize he went that far back, but that's some great basketball history right there. The
really
Palestra.
Good.
In Philadelphia. I've
Kobe's
never been there. That's one where I really like
that's
to see
cool.
a game. I've heard such cool things about that place.
Wow. That was very
Joe Jellybean Bryant, Kobe's dad. He referenced him. That's a great name.
Our man Mike there, a career 10-point per game score. He could score a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, did you look up his numbers?
Yeah, you looked up the numbers,
absolutely.
Huh? All right.
Oh, I vetted it. Yeah, he gave me the name during the call, and that's why I was going through to make sure if I could find your name in the roster, yeah, you are who you say you are.
That's
yeah.
why you're on this show, Elijah.
That's awesome.
Exactly, yeah. Sweet. So
good work.
4 years, yeah. 10 points per game in his career, average 3 fouls a game. There's not as much info in the 70s on Basketball Reference, but we definitely have the shooting numbers. 52% career from the field. And never shot more than 10 times a game, but quality starter minutes, 10 points a game, solid.
10 points a game, take it.
That's good.
Like that.
Wow. Playing on some good teams.
Look at you. Maybe the Titans should hire you.
That's right. We wouldn't have this Isaiah Wilson thing if they hired me. I grab my shovel and I dig. Oh.
Well
too
done.
Soon?
Well, no, no, not at all. Okay. By the way, Willie, I got this text. Who is Willie to talk about color coordination? He shows up to the studio in colors that represent the rainbow.
Oh, then that's somebody we know. And I got to
find out inside
off the
info.
Air. Yeah,
the colors come from inside the house.
Off the air, who that was, because we He's know
not,
that. But
he or she is not wrong.
That's a good comeback.
Good comeback. Yeah, who Touché. Kansas State's comeback is? Who are you to tell us talk about our uniforms? You should be proud of our uniforms. Well, yes. Your problem is there's just not enough colors. There just wasn't enough last night. They need more colors in there. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, I was just sitting there. It just, I mean, my mouth hit the floor like, you've got to be. Is this a joke? Did they lose a bet? Like, is this real? How did this happen? Like, how did the – I can't believe these kids didn't stand up and say, no, put those away. No, we're not wearing these tonight. Not happening.
That's the Chris Sale story. Chris Sale, when he was pitching for the White Sox, and those that know the old baseball uniforms, the White Sox used to have – the White Sox have changed uniforms a bunch of times, but in the late 70s and early 80s, they had these crazy uniforms with butterfly collars. They're unlike anything ever before or since. And they had butterfly collars like the 70s. The shirts, they didn't tuck in the shirts. They had navy pants with white jerseys. And Chris Sale refused to wear it. He was pitching, and so he got there early. And he took scissors, and he cut them up before the clubhouse guys could stop him. And so he shredded these things so they couldn't wear them in the game. He said, you know what? I'm pitching, and I am not wearing this uniform, and I'm going to prove it to you.
Knowing him, he probably went out there and had 17 Ks.
He probably did. And they're like, okay, you're forgiven.
Yeah. Yeah, my guess is he backed up.
But they got pretty mad. I think he got fined.
No. No way. The White Sox were mad at Chris Sale.
You got to pull up that story out of Google. That takes some guts there. You really must hate those uniforms. You're saying that's maybe what Kansas State should have done? Is just rebel and just say,
I think they should have stood up and said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. We're not wearing those. Show a sign of unity. What is it? Unity with the uniforms?
I like unity in my uniforms.
Unified. Yes.
Uniformity.
Uniformity in my uniforms. This message by Chase McCabe.
You got a message about BetMGM.
I sure do, because they are the king of sportsbooks, and they are inviting you to discover a brand new way to bet parlays. You know I love parlays. I had a few last night that hit. Introducing One Game Parlay, an exciting new feature developed to help you make selections within a single game from over 400 bet types, including team and player props. Log into your BetMGM account and raise the stakes for a chance to win big. Making your same game win, total, and prop pick is easy with One Game Parlay. If you're new to BetMGM, sign up today and make every play of every game matter more than ever. You can make One Game Parlay bets on soccer and NBA games, with more sports coming soon. Go ahead and take your favorite player to score, the home team to cover, and the over in points for the star player. It's that easy. Log in today or download the BetMGM app and try One Game Parlay. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You must be 21 years or older, must be present in Tennessee. For gambling problem support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.